Hello and welcome to a very special edition of MMA and Stuff on HalfGuarded.com. My name is Matt Grady. Typically, I am joined by Michael Coughlin Esquire. This is the first MMA and Stuff that Mike was unavailable. He is currently tied up with some puggle issues. One of the dogs isn't doing real well, and he's attending to that. So I'm going to do a quick show here this time. It's not going to probably be as controversial or interesting or as exciting or as long. Not a lot of Trump talk this week or Celtics talk or Tom Brady either. We're just going to hit up the MMA news, keep our streak of doing shows alive, and kind of take it from there. There were two minor shows this past weekend. There was a Bellator show on Spike, headlined by Rory McDonald versus Paul Daly. McDonald really dominated the fight. He won by rear naked choke at 145 of the second round. This was the show in London, England at the SSE Arena on May 19th. McDonald looked great. He took Daly down at will, just looked like the more complete fighter. Even standing, he looked pretty good as well. It seems like the time off was good for Rory, and he really just dominated the fight everywhere and got the big win. It looks like he's probably in line for a welterweight title shot next against the winner of it's on the MSG card. Drawing a blank on that fight, but for the welterweight title in Bellator. And then he also, after the fight, called out Fedor or Wanderlei Silva, which would be major freak show fights that make no sense at all, but two that I would certainly be interested in watching. Prior to the fight, McDonald had even mentioned that he was making less money on endorsements with Bellator because he didn't want to have a whole bunch of patches on his trunks. So I think he had like a Monster Energy tag on the back of his trunks, and that was about it. But he did get $400,000 for the fight itself. So definitely an increase from those 59 and 59 payouts he was getting in the UFC. So he seemed happy and looked good. In the semi-main event, Linton Vassell defeated Liam McGeary by arm triangle in the third round at 228 in. Vassell just took McGeary down whenever he wanted to and had the advantage on the ground. McGeary did not look good in this fight, didn't show much at all, and I'm not really sure what's going on with McGeary. He was looking like one of the top light heavyweights in Bellator, and now he's lost a couple in a row. Vassell will probably go on for a title fight against the winner of Phil Davis and Ryan Bader at MSG. Also on the card, Chet Congo defeated Augusto Sakai in a really boring fight. And Baby Slice won in the opener by TKO over DJ Griffin at 340 of the first round. There was also an Invictus show over the weekend on Saturday night. It was headlined by Vanessa Porto and forget the lady's name. It's a weird Russian sounding name. I'm gonna pull it up here. Agnieszka Nitsvidzd. She actually defeated Porto by a unanimous decision, 29-28 on all three cards. Foxy Roxy Modafferi defeated Sara D'Elio by TKO with elbows in the third round. She got mount and just landed a bunch of elbows to the face, and the ref waved it off. Andrea KGB Lee defeated Liz Tracy by split decision. Those are probably most of the names on the card you'd be familiar with. I did not see most of that show. I saw some highlights. Invictus shows are usually fun. I just was unable to get there this past week with life and everything else going on. Moving away from fight results, there was a UFC fighters retreat this past weekend in Las Vegas. Lots of fighters, I think over 300 fighters, flew out for this thing. They toured the new UFC headquarters, which they've been building for years out there, saw the training facilities and the rehab center, and basically got a tour of these new headquarters that the UFC has been building. There were also several conferences given about investing and better training practices, for the fighters as well. Kobe Bryant actually gave a talk. There was a Snoop Dogg concert to close out the weekend. Some fighters really seemed to enjoy the weekend, like Mike Perry. He was talking it up, saying that it was awesome. He learned a lot. It was the time of his life. He wouldn't change a thing. Then other guys like Ray Janelle, Iaquinta, felt like it was a waste of time and ended up going to a strip club instead. So I guess it depends who you ask on the UFC fighters retreat and how they felt it went. With several hundred fighters there and booze flowing and it being kind of a party atmosphere, several fighters ended up in the news as well. A guy who you probably haven't heard of by the name of Cajun Johnson, who is 2-1 in the UFC. I believe he fights out of TriStar in Montreal. He spoke up during a talk given by Reebok executives. They were there kind of just talking to the fighters about the Reebok deal and sponsoring fighters and that sort of thing. Cajun Johnson, actually stood up and explained that the Reebok deal had cost him roughly 80% of his sponsorship money, and he wasn't the only fighter in that boat. He also mentioned that he was disappointed that the fighters weren't allowed to be in on negotiating the deal when it was originally made. And that's been a constant criticism for years. There's no union. There's really no fighter representation like there is in the other big sports, the NBA, NFL, MLB, that sort of thing. So he stood up and he was quickly taken out of the room. I don't want to say he was thrown out, but he was essentially asked to leave. He was chastised by management out in the hallway for speaking out in that forum. But later on, he did meet with UFC executives and several other fighters like Joe Lozon. I think Sarah McMahon was also there. A bunch of fighters essentially sat down with upper UFC management and talked about the sponsorship deal and the Reebok deal and how that's all worked out. And in the end, Johnson's done several interviews and said that he felt like the later meeting with the UFC execs was really productive and helpful and feels like they're headed in the right direction. He's glad he spoke up and got some things off his chest. And you got to wonder if the UFC put this retreat and weekend together, was it just for fun to help the fighters, or did they know there was some simmering discontent amongst the ranks here and they felt they needed to give people a chance to voice their opinions, which even though they removed him and didn't like the way he did it, he still got his voice heard and several other fighters were heard as well. So maybe it's a positive for morale within the UFC and with all the fighters. I mentioned before Kobe Bryant was there. He gave a talk or an interview and then took questions from the fighters. They had mics. Leslie Smith got on the mic, stood up, and asked if Bryant felt unions were beneficial in pro sports. Bryant responded that many NBA players don't see eye to eye or get along, but they could all come together to agree that the NBA Players Union was beneficial to everyone. Smith has been a longtime proponent of a union in the UFC, or some sort of trade association, something, so the fighters have more of a voice and have a united front to go to UFC management and, you know, avoid things like the Reebok deal or have some say in the USADA testing, get better pay, better benefits, that sort of thing. She's been a big proponent forever of that. And when she stood up, she did get a bit of a pop. Some people kind of oohed and aahed, and other people applauded her. And Bryant's statement only further cemented her point that, yeah, maybe it's time the UFC fighters did kind of band together and take a stand against management a little more and get what they think they deserve. Whether or not anything ever comes of that remains to be seen. I think the big factor will be the large drawing fighters, you know, your Conor McGregor's, Ronda Rousey's, John Jones, getting on board with a union. Right now, those guys are still well taken care of. It so resembles what goes on in WWE, where it's hard to get a union going when the top five stars are making millions of dollars and, you know, management considers the lower level, mid level guys expendable. If Leslie Smith goes to work for Bellator or another company, it's not going to hurt the UFC any. And do they want to pay hundreds, literally hundreds of fighters more money and give them more benefits? They probably don't want to, and they don't really have to if, you know, 40 fighters go on strike. They're not even going to feel it or notice when they've got over 400 guys on the roster and they can replace them. if Conor McGregor, Ronda Rousey, John Jones, you know, Anderson, other big name fighters banded together with the lower level guys and also all said, hey, we're going to start a union. This is what we're doing. We want to negotiate and get better deals for everyone. Then the UFC would have to listen. Until then, I don't see much coming out of the Leslie Smith and Kobe Bryant interaction, but you know, maybe it'll get the ball rolling and things will improve in that regard for the fighters. In a funny moment, there was also a rep from Anheuser-Busch, you know, Bud Light. He gave a talk about who Anheuser-Busch likes to sponsor. They like to sponsor winners, guys who win fights. And if you lose a fight, we might stop sponsoring you. Obviously, this didn't go over well with fighters. A lot of guys were saying everybody loses a fight. It's just part of MMA. And a lot of people were mocking this guy from Anheuser-Busch because he appeared really drunk and was kind of slurring his words and stumbling around and not making a whole lot of sense. He actually walked onto the stage with a Bud Light in his hand. So probably not the best person to send to a talk about fighter sponsorships. There's also another funny aspect to this whole thing. I think it was Kat Zingano posted a picture on her Twitter account of this Reebok coupon offering 50% off any merchandise bought with this certain promo code. So basically they handed out coupons to all the fighters for 50% off Reebok gear. Which I guess, depending on your outlook, is either nice or really cheap and out of touch. Personally, I can kind of see both sides. From Reebok's perspective, they probably thought they were doing something nice. But from the fighter's perspective, where they already dislike Reebok, are mad about this deal, resent it, feel like they have no say in what they wear, they can't put their personality out there because they're forced to wear these two-color Reebok outfits, and they've lost money because of the Reebok deal. They can't have other sponsors on their uniforms. Giving them a coupon for 50% off was kind of, in a lot of people's minds, spitting in their face because they don't like Reebok. They want nothing to do with it. And in a lot of sports, you just get free gear. That's part of the deal. If you're sponsored, you get free stuff. And I think that goes for a lot of jobs and a lot of places where, you know, one of the perks of working there is, you know, you get, you know, a free uniform, or, you know, if you work at a restaurant, you might get free meals, that sort of thing. A lot of jobs have that. And to give them a coupon where Reebok's probably going to turn some sort of profit on whatever they sell to the fighters who they're supposed to be sponsoring, didn't come off good and actually looked a little tone deaf, I think. The biggest story, though, out of the whole entire UFC fighters retreat this weekend was the scuffle between Chris Cyborg and Angela Magana. There's been some crappy quality video online of this that you couldn't really make out exactly what happened. But going back in time a little bit, Magana's given Cyborg a lot of crap on Twitter about her appearance. She compared her to like the little villain puppet thing in Saw, the movie Saw, the horror movie. And has accused her of using steroids, yada, yada, yada. Magana's known for that sort of thing. She's a troll, and not a sympathetic character in any way. She just goes out of her way to be outrageous to get press. And I think most people know that. It says something about Cyborg that she was that upset with Magana. When you know somebody's a troll, it's easy to blow them off, I think. But maybe not for Cyborg. Maybe there's a language barrier, or she just doesn't get Magana and what she's trying to do. Anyways, it was like the middle of the afternoon, and outside of, you know, the new UFC headquarters, Cyborg and Magana got into an argument. Cyborg was telling her that she had to respect her. Magana was saying she can say whatever the F she wants. And then Cyborg punched her in the face and like busted her lip open. So Cyborg was clearly pissed and kind of goaded into it from Magana's constant insults and whatever. But you can't punch people. I know Mike and I have talked about this. We talked about Richard Spencer, the Nazi guy, getting punched in the middle of D.C. during the Trump inauguration. And I think we both agree that you can't just hit anybody for any reason. Just keep your hands to yourself. Let Magana say what she's going to say. Take the high road and don't touch her. Because now Cyborg's got another set of issues besides the, you know, the failed steroid test and whatever that medication she was taking that she popped for a couple months ago. She still doesn't have a fight lined up. Nobody wants to fight her. She's not in the good graces of UFC management at all. You can't go around punching people, especially other employees in the UFC. It's not like Magana's the only person who's criticized Cyborg's looks. Dana White at a presser walked around mocking Cyborg and said she looked like Wanderlei Silva in a dress. Cyborg didn't try and punch Dana White. She punched a 115-pound fighter that she probably literally outweighs by 50 pounds. Just a bad look on Cyborg's part. Dumb move. Not something she should have done. Yet at the same time, I don't really feel that bad for Magana because she's a troll and I don't want to say she was asking for it. Nobody's asking to get punched in the face. But at the same time, I can't think of a lot of people who would be less sympathetic than her. Either way, Magana has pressed charges against Cyborg. The police are involved. Whether it's assault and battery or what, obviously Cyborg's not going to do any jail time for it. At the same time, the UFC's not going to be in a rush to book her for another high-profile fight either. So time will tell what'll happen there, but not a good move by Cyborg at all. It was also announced over the last couple days that the bantamweight title fight between Cody Garbrandt and TJ Dillashaw is off the UFC 213 card due to Garbrandt's bad back. Last week we talked about it a bit, but Garbrandt had gone to Germany for some emergency like stem cell treatments. He was getting shots in his back. He put video out there on social media of this, but apparently it did not take, so Garbrandt's out. Dillashaw, in the meantime, is trying really hard to get a fight with Mighty Mouse Johnson for the 125-pound title, the flyweight title, in Seattle in August. This isn't a fight fans were clamoring for at all, but Johnson's next fight was kind of sort of tentatively lined up with Ray Borg, a guy who nobody's really ever heard of. Great fighter, has won 4 or 5 in a row at lightweight. Definitely a capable guy, but he'd be a heavy underdog against Mighty Mouse, and it's not a fight that would draw at all at the box office. Granted, Dillashaw is not a big deal, but he's a much bigger name than Borg, especially coming off the Ultimate Fighter, the Dominic Cruz feud, that whole story. For me, it seems like a solid fight and one that would draw better than most other flyweight title fights, especially for Johnson. At the same time, though, Johnson doesn't seem interested at all in fighting Dillashaw, claiming he's never fought in the division, which is true. Dillashaw would be dropping down from 135 to 125. He's never made that weight. I don't know if he's ever done a test cut down there. I'm assuming he hasn't, but going from 35 to 25 when you were the bantamweight champion of the world at 135 might be tough. We talked a little bit about it last week, too, I think. And that maybe Dillashaw's smaller than he used to be since USADA has been enacted. I know that's a claim Uriah Faber's made over and over again. But time will tell there. DJ doesn't seem that interested, but Dillashaw is pushing for it. And maybe if enough fans get behind it, that fight could happen. It'd be a fun fight. I wouldn't be mad about it. I don't think Borg is necessarily the top contender. He's certainly in the mix and a worthy foe, but he's not a draw and he could use one more win. So why not do the Dillashaw fight against Johnson? They can build it up as a former bantamweight champion coming down. DJ's going for the record for most title defenses in a row. He's fighting a bigger guy. It would be a little more interesting than the Borg fight for sure. So I'd book it if I could, if it were me. What else do we have going on? So let's back up. With Garbrandt and Dillashaw off the 213 card, that show's hurting. Hurting bad. I mean, it's Amanda Nunez in the main event against Valentina Shevchenko. Not a good draw for, 4th of July weekend and what's typically one of the UFC's biggest shows every year. So with Dillashaw and Garbrandt off, we're going to have another interim title fight. Another one, yes. This is going to be an interim middleweight title fight between Yoel Romero and Robert Whittaker. So this is going to be the co-main underneath the Nunez bantamweight women's title fight. This fight was clearly made for two reasons. One, it's there to bolster UFC 213, which it may and may not do. Romero's not really a draw. Nobody knows Whittaker. Both are great middleweights. Both are on tears in the UFC. Both are, top five middleweights handily. Yoel's the number one contender, and Whittaker's moved into the top five off that win over Jacare, where he just destroyed Jacare. But it's being thrown in as an interim title fight to help UFC 213, which it probably won't really do because neither guy's really a draw. And it's also going to be a placeholder for Bisping and GSP. GSP still wants the Bisping fight. Bisping still wants the GSP fight. So that's probably not going to happen until, late fall, early winter, like November is what GSP was shooting for. And Bisping's saying he has a bad knee now. So this could be a placeholder in the meantime until GSP gets his act together or Bisping's knee's better. I've always had the impression that Bisping doesn't really want to fight Romero. It's not the best matchup for Bisping. And on top of it, Bisping's got an issue because Romero's popped for like a USADA failure. It was claimed to be a tainted supplement, but Bisping will claim until the day he dies that Romero's on steroids. Bisping would probably be willing to fight Whittaker, who used to fight at welterweight at 170 pounds. Whittaker is not a big middleweight by any stretch, and he's probably going to be the underdog against Romero. But it'll be interesting to see how this whole thing will pan out. Personally, if it were me, I'd rather have seen Romero versus Rockhold. I know Rockhold's coming off the loss to Bisping, but Rockhold's more of a perennial top five guy than Whittaker, a little bigger. I think would pose a stiffer challenge to Romero, but kind of a mess again. Another division in shambles due to interim title fights. You've got the same issue at featherweight, a little bit at lightweight now. Really just watering down the titles now. I know they got to make money and they're trying to turn a profit now, but this probably isn't the best way to do it. They're kind of cutting off their nose to spite their face. Just cheapens the title. It makes them less valuable. They feel less important when there's two champions in every division and guys are fighting out of their weight classes. It just gets messy. I mean, you could argue the same thing would happen at bantamweight at 135 if Dillashaw moved down to 125, won the title there, and then wanted to move back up. That could happen, but if Dillashaw makes 125 and wins the title, he'll probably want to just stay at 125, I would guess. But we'll see how all this sorts out. As far as Romero and Whittaker, it should be a fun fight. I like both the guys. I like both their styles. I'd have to favor Romero, though, because he's just so much bigger, and that wrestling base is going to be hard for Whittaker to overcome. There was another fight announced this past week. Sergio Pettis has a fight again after his last fight fell out with Henry Cejudo with the broken hand a couple weeks back. Pettis is going to face Brandon Moreno at UFC Fight Night 114 in Mexico City on August 5th. That fight will actually headline the UFC Fight Night card. Fun fight. Moreno's been a fun guy to watch over the last, you know, 6 months. He's won, I want to say, 3 or 4 fights in a row in the UFC. And personally, I like this fight better for Pettis, too, than Cejudo. Cejudo is going to be a tough matchup for Pettis. This will be probably an exciting fight, an action fight. Both guys go all out. And it's a good fight for Pettis, and it should be a winnable one. Although going down to Mexico City and fighting at altitude doesn't always go well for guys, especially if this thing goes 5 rounds, I could see Pettis getting tired. But a more favorable matchup than Cejudo for sure. This coming weekend, we've got a UFC fight night. It is coming from Stockholm, Sweden, I believe. Let's take a look. In the main event, I know we've got Alexander Gustafsson versus Glover Teixeira in a light heavyweight bout. Both top 5 light heavyweights. I think people have kind of forgotten about them because they've both gotten title shots against Jon Jones and lost. Glover's lost to Rumble Johnson, so is Gustafsson. So they're a step down, you know, from your Jones, Cormier, Rumble, pre-retirement sort of guys. But the scary thing is, if one of these guys wins this fight convincingly, they could get the winner of Jones-Cormier just because there's a lack of contenders. Personally, I would favor Gustafsson. He seems to win the fights he's supposed to win. He's going to have the reach advantage on Glover. Glover in his last fight didn't look great. He uses wrestling to win. It was kind of a boring fight. It'll be interesting to see how this one goes. This show, by the way, is on Sunday night this week, May 28th, from the Ericsson Globe Arena in Stockholm, Sweden. The co-main event's got Volkan Ozdemir versus Misha Cirkunov. Again, two guys, rank light heavyweights. You may have never heard of either of them. But Cirkunov's the guy who was negotiating a new contract, and Dana White got pissed because he was not getting back to him quick enough. Then Dana met with him and his wife like 2 or 3 times over dinner and ended up working out the deal. And we've joked about it that it was odd that Dana met for dinner with Misha Cirkunov, of all people. But he's 30, he's 6'3", a Canadian / Russian / I want to say Latvian, a lot of ethnicities there, but he's on a 7-fight win streak, including 4 in a row in the UFC. His last win was against Nikita Krylov. So he's, definitely a contender, an up and coming guy who with a big win here would again, probably be, you know, 5th or 6th in the division. The guy's fighting, Volkan Ozdemir, fought in Bellator for quite a while, but he's actually 13-1. He's won 3 in a row with this last win coming over OSP in a kind of boring fight on the UFC Fight Night 104 card with Bermudez versus the Korean Zombie. He won by split decision. Nobody really remembers that fight. But being OSP isn't an easy thing to do by any stretch. So again, two guys, not with a lot of name recognition, but two guys you should probably watch out for because whoever wins this is going to probably get a big light heavyweight fight after this. And probably after that, if either of these guys can win 2 in a row, they'd be in line for a title shot. How scary is that? The light heavyweight is that thin right now. Not a whole heck of a lot else on this card, as far as familiar names. Peter Sabata versus Killer B. Ben Saunders. And a lot of these guys you've probably never heard of. I'm looking down the list here. Chris Camozzi's on the undercard. Reza Madadi. I think he's the guy who steals purses. Got arrested for that, if memory serves me. He's originally from Iran. But I think he got arrested for like illegally selling purses or stealing them or something. And I could be totally wrong, and Mike would make fun of me at this time because I'm just pulling this out of my ass. But I could have sworn he was in trouble for like illegally selling or stealing purses or counterfeit purses or something. Anyway, Reza Matadi is on the undercard. Other than that, Bellator is off until the MSG show, and that's not until, I want to say, the end of June. So really nothing from Bellator for a while. UFC 212 is sneaking up on us. That is on June 3rd, so the following Saturday. That's the show headlined by Jose Aldo versus Max Holloway for the featherweight interim. Well, I guess Holloway's the interim champ and Aldo's the real champ, so they're going to merge those two titles. That's the following weekend on Saturday. On that note, I am going to get out of here. This was a very quick show. I'm hoping it recorded and I can send it to Mike. We went about 30 minutes. Mike should be back next week. If you know Mike personally, you want to drop him a line, tell him you're thinking of, I think it's the Rally Puggle, if I know his puggles right. I'm not sure if that's Mickey or the other one. But I know he and Brother Brian, probably Mother Coughlin, are bummed out about the dog. So send him some good wishes, and we will be back with more MMA and stuff on halfguarded.com next week. You can check us out on Twitter at halfguarded. For me, it's Matt F. Grady on Twitter. Other than that, we'll talk to you next week. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.